Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shemot. The end of the year is approaching, and that means that it's time to ask you to please consider contributing to Pardes. Pardes is an institution focused on the very best in Jewish teaching for people of every background. Your contribution will make a big effect because Pardes is a small institution, and we very much appreciate your help. You can donate online at any time via donate.pardesusa.org. If you're in the U.S., your contribution is fully tax deductible, and we're also registered as a charity in Israel if you're based there. Thank you very much for considering a gift to Pardes. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Shemot. There is a handout for this podcast, so please check that out. I'm going to send it as the next episode. And also, I'll be sending a PDF copy of the Chavruta newsletter from Pardes that we put out every year. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discussing Shemot. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is a faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Programs. So now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. Once upon a time, there was a prince, and this prince lived in a castle. This prince lived in a castle and was cut off from the rest of the world. He didn't see fighting. He didn't see anger. He didn't see unhappiness. He didn't see poverty. He didn't see strife. But one day, the prince left the castle and went and looked into the world. And there he saw horrible things happening, and he knew he had to respond. This prince could be two different people. The castle could be in two different places. And the reaction could be very, very different. On the one hand, this is the story of the Buddha. At the age of 29, Siddhartha, who was a prince, left his palace to meet his subjects. Despite his father trying very, very hard to hide from him his whole life, people who were sick and people who were old and people who were suffering, nevertheless, it was not possible to do it completely, and Siddhartha saw an old man. And it was explained to him that all people grow old. And then he went beyond the palace and he saw somebody who was diseased. And then he saw somebody who was dead. He saw a decaying corpse. And he saw an ascetic. And he became depressed. Not surprisingly, by the way, if you'd never seen any of these things happening. And his first reaction, this is different from what his reaction was later, was by leaving the world and becoming an ascetic. A very, very similar story, but a very, very different response, is that of Moses. Moses, too, was a prince in a palace. Moses, too, looked out of the window one day and saw two people fighting. But Moses' response was very, very different. Moses' response was to kill the Egyptian who was beating the Israelite. Two very, very different responses, and neither without their problematics. The story of Buddha is problematic because he retreated from the world rather than acting upon the world. Whereas with Moses, one has the opposite problem, and that is that perhaps Moses acted too quickly or too rashly or too extremely. On what grounds did he kill this Mitzri? And it is even more significant and more important, this moment, because this is the moment when Moses, in fact, becomes a Jew. This is his moment of conversion to Judaism. It's his moment when he decides what it means to be a Jew. So understanding this incident is of extreme importance in understanding what is Judaism about. If you look at your first source, Shemot chapter 2, verses 11 to 12, V'yahi b'yamim ha'hem, and it was in those days, V'yigdal Moshe, and Moshe grew up, V'yatza el echav, he went to his brothers, they've suddenly become his brothers, V'yar b'sivlotam, and he saw their suffering, V'yar ish mitzri, makeh ish ivri me'echav, he saw an Egyptian man hitting an Hebrew man of his brothers. Again, these brothers. He looks around. He sees that there isn't a man. And he beats the Egyptian, he hits the Egyptian, and hides him in the sand. Source number two comments, this text does not moralize on Moses' act of violence. Nowhere is there an explicit evaluation that either praises or condemns it. Rather, a situation is painted with great realism and sensitivity, and the leader is left to ponder on the anomalies of the deed. Moses acts in order to right an injustice, not for his own sake, but for another's. He's motivated to react with violence out of love for his people, which might even jeopardize his own life. Despite B.S. Charles's comment that the text does not moralize, and it is indeed true, later rabbis do grapple with the idea of, was this a legitimate act? Was Moses a political assassin? Is that a legitimate way to approach a problem? And a number of answers are honest to try and say that what Moses did was indeed correct. If you look at your third source, Vayikra, we read, Umake Adam Yumat, one who kills a human being shall be put to death. And the Rambam expands on this in the Hilchot of Rotzeach, chapter 1, Halacha 6. Harodef achar chavero lehorgo, the one who pursues his fellow with an intent to kill. Harei kol Yisrael mutzuvin lahatzil hanirdaf, you are commanded to save the person who is being chased. Miyad harodef, from the hand of the chaser, the pursuer. Vafilu benafsho shel rodef, even if he needs, you have to kill the pursuer. So we could say that Moses was trying to save the Yisrael's life, that he was worried that this person was going to beat him to death, although that is by no means 100% clear. He may have just been beating him, and this is the problematics of it. He may have just been beating him. He may not have meant to kill him. So on the one hand, if we say that he was worried that the Yisraeli, the Ivri, was going to be killed, then you could say he was saving him, that the Egyptian had the din of Rodef, of a pursuer. On the other hand, this Vayikra could also be used against Moshe and saying that he, Moshe, should be put to death for killing a human being. So one strategy to deal with it is that he was trying to save the Yisrael's life. A second strategy is found on your fifth text on your page in Shmot Rabbah, where we read a story about an Egyptian taskmaster who one day sees a beautiful Israelite woman and he casts his eyes upon her. So he goes to her home and he waits until the husband has left, and he then goes into the house and has sex with the wife, and she becomes pregnant with him. A total aside is, it just fascinates me that the Balei Midrash could imagine this happening. This woman wouldn't realize it wasn't her husband. What is it implying about this woman? What is it implying about the relationship? But that is a side point. Another class, another time. Then the Midrash says, it so happened that the husband turned back and saw the Egyptian as he was leaving the house. He goes back and asks his wife, did the Egyptian touch you? And she said, yes, but I thought it was you. When the taskmaster realized this was happening, he put the husband to heavy labor and beat him all day, trying to kill him. This is, on the one hand, saying that, reinforcing the previous argument that he was trying to kill him, but it's also saying that this man had not kept the Sheva Mitzvot Mnei Noach. There are 7 Noahide commandments, which according to the Talmud, every person in the world has to keep, Gentiles and Jews. And if a person does not keep them, according to Shemot Rabbah, it seems to be saying it's a duty to take the law into one's own hand, to, on the one hand, to save the victim, but add to it the fact that the Mitzri was not keeping Noahide law. And it then goes on and says that Moses saw through Ruach HaKodesh, through the Holy Spirit, what had happened, and he was therefore zealous and slayed the Egyptian. So the first answer, which is reinforced by the second answer, is that the Mitzri was trying to kill the Ivri. The second answer is that, in addition to this, he had broken one of the Noahide commandments. Adultery is forbidden, immoral sexual practices is forbidden, and that he had behaved in this incorrect and despicable way, and therefore Moses was justified in what he did. Another strand, turn over the page now, please. Another strand that is going on, another way, another strategy which is going on to explain what is happening, deals with the whole issue of what does the word makeh, what does the word vayach, vayach mean. The Rasag, in number 8, makes a very, very simple comment. Vayach et ha-mitzri v'yamet. He hit the Egyptian and he died. This is one of these Rasags that looks very, very simple, but can be unpacked. First of all, it's pointing out that there is a certain parallelism in what happened. It says the Ish Mitzri makeh, the Ish Ivri, that the Egyptian man maked, if you will, the Ivri, and in return Moses was vayach. It's the same verb, makeh, and it seems to imply a certain equivalency. Moses was not going out to kill the Mitzri. He was beating him. It was midah kenegen midah. It was measure to measure. But he beat him so hard that he died. If the text wanted to say that Moses killed the Mitzri, there are plenty of words. Vayaharog. Vayirtzach. There are plenty of words that could be used. But it doesn't. It says he hits him. So what this argument is saying is the death was not intended. What was intended was to save the Yehudi. What was intended was maybe even to punish the Mitzri, but certainly not to kill him. So the first two answers say Moses killed him and that was legitimate. The third answer says, no, he wasn't trying to kill him, he was trying to hit him. The Ha'emek Devar in number 9 speaks about it as a special circumstance. Moses looked around for a way to bring the Egyptian who struck the Hebrew for naught to justice, but saw there was nobody he could appeal to for justice, for all were against the Jews. This is looking at the part of the Pasuk that says that Moses looked around. There's no legal system, and therefore there is a temporary setting aside of the law because of circumstance. He takes the law into his own hands. What the Emek Devar is saying is a little broader than the arguments have said. He's saying Egypt is a land in which there is no law. Egypt is the land in which there is no due process. Egypt is a land in which there is no functioning judiciary. And therefore, in such a circumstance, it's legitimate for a person to take the law into his own hands. So we see four very, very different arguments. The first one is saying, he killed him to save the Jew. The second one is saying he killed him to save the Jew, but also because he had broken one of the Noahide commandments. The third strategy is saying he didn't try and kill him, he only tried to hit him, and the killing happened by the side. And the last answer is saying Moses is justified not because of killing, not killing, not because of hitting, not because of Noahide, not Noahide, but because we're talking about lacuna, we're talking about a country with a total absence of justice, and therefore it's legitimate to take the law into one's own hands. But let's look at number 10. Number 10 is very, very different. In Midrash Ptirat Moshe, Moses is trying to put off his death so he can enter Eretz Yisrael, and asks for God. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, did I tell you to slay the Egyptian? God is saying to Moses, the reason that you can't go into Eretz Yisrael is that you slave the Egyptian. Moses answered, you slew all the firstborn in Egypt. Is a chutzpah. What audacity to say to God, but you did the same thing. But I read something, in addition to the audacity, I read something else. I think Moses, maybe I'm overreading, and if I am, so be it. But I think maybe Moses is taking God to task. Moses is saying, why did you not do it? You slew all the firstborn in Egypt. Couldn't you come and help us now? Then God silenced him by saying, can you liken yourself to me? I caused death, but I also revived the dead. He says, you can't look at me and say that to me. I have a different type of law. So according to this, what Moshe did was indeed a mistake. It was indeed wrong. There should have been due process, and it was in fact not the right thing to do. What I find always fascinating in these arguments is that the tradition feels the need to explain this behavior. I think the mere fact the question is being asked, the mere fact that there is this type of ethical concern and thought speaks very, very strongly of the rabbis. And if we speak about this is the moment when he becomes a Jew, what does it mean that the moment that Moses becomes a Jew is the moment of an act of violence? I would state it rather differently, that the moment that Moses becomes a Jew is the moment when he realizes that sometimes in life one has to do things that may be morally problematic, but this does not stop you from acting. One needs to act anyway. That something is difficult or problematic is not an excuse for not doing anything. And I think regardless of the ethics of this particular situation, and different from the Buddha, what this story and what this learning is telling us is that the authentic Jewish response on seeing evil is to act in the world. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkreuz. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thank you again for considering a contribution to Pardes, and we'll see you next week.